Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it mean if you see, hear, or feel things that are not really there? Are these tricks of perception evidence that our sanity is failing us? Although many of us associate hallucinations with severe mental illness, my guest today would remind us that there are numerous other reasons our brain might perceive sensory stimuli that don't exist, and therefore such experiences are surprisingly common. And rather than being only harbingers of complete loss of control, it is even possible for our visions to comfort or inspire us. Oliver Sacks is professor of neurology at the NYU School of Medicine and author of many books. His latest is called Hallucinations. Oliver, welcome back to Think.
Nice to be with you.
You make the point that hallucinations in some other cultures are treated as sort of privileged states of consciousness. That is not the case here. What do you think makes us so different in the West?
Well, I think probably one of the things is the decline of religion, so that one can no longer sort of think that it is the divine or the demonic which is giving one visions or voices, but the other is the rise of the medical. And the word hallucinations was first used in the medical context around 1830 or so. I think it's a word which is often misunderstood because there's stigma attached to it, and people imagine that hallucinations mean mental illness or decay, but in fact they're all sorts of benign hallucinations, and it's especially those I've written about.
What are the challenges of studying benign hallucinations in a lab setting, given that their onset can be so unpredictable?
Well, I think one can learn a lot about the brain. You find that particular hallucinations, for example, hallucinations of faces, occur in the same part of the brain as is normally used for recognizing faces, and in this way, sort of vision is being hijacked a little bit by hallucination. But hallucinations may be almost indistinguishable from perceptions.
Go ahead, please.
No, so one will certainly be startled, and then one has to sort of think what's going on.
Can medications be effective in reducing the frequency of hallucinations for people who have these?
Well, it depends on the cause of hallucinations, but one condition which can cause all sorts of hallucinations is epilepsy. Mm-hmm. And of course, that is controllable by drugs or other measures.
It is fascinating that one common reason for hallucinations is a decline in physical sensory function, in sight. Can you tell us about Charles Bonnet and the syndrome of hallucinations that is named after him?
Yes. Well, I especially work in old age homes, and I see a lot of elderly people who are losing their sight or their hearing, but are completely with it mentally. And something like 15% of the people with impaired vision or blindness get elaborate hallucinations. They can see animals and landscapes and people, as well as colors and patterns. This was first described in the middle of the 18th century by a Swiss man called Charles Bonnet, and one speaks of Charles Bonnet syndrome. And what seems to be the case is that the visual parts of the brain have to be active all the while. They can't just shut down. And if they're not getting any input from the outside, they will make use of what's inside, of memories and so forth, whether one is dreaming or hallucinating. But of course, hallucinating is very different from dreaming, because in dreaming you're completely absorbed in the dream. You don't know that you're dreaming, and you accept everything, whereas with a hallucination you have your normal critical consciousness, which can say, what's that? I didn't order that.
And you read about a patient named Rosalie who experiences Charles Bonnet syndrome, but interestingly, she doesn't really seem to, we often say, suffer from an ailment, but that's not exactly what's going on with her.
She started seeing things, often people in oriental robes and rows of people walking around, and she is blind, and she was very startled, and the nurses wondered what was going on. I went over her carefully, and I couldn't find anything wrong, basically, in her brain or mind. She wasn't on any drugs which might produce hallucinations, but her eyes were a mess. Mm-hmm. And I sort of told her that loss of vision often leads to visual hallucinations, that this is well known, it doesn't portend anything bad. And she was very reassured. She said, tell the nurses, I have Charles Bonnet syndrome. Hmm.
So I wonder if that's an impediment to people talking honestly with their physicians about these things, because we do, if we don't necessarily assume that they mean that we are mentally unstable, we worry that other people will think that.
Yeah. We may fear it ourselves, but in general, people don't spontaneously bring out that they have hallucinations. They're afraid to mention it and afraid what it might mean. And particularly, say, with Charles Bonnet syndrome, it used to be thought that it was pretty rare because people didn't mention it. But if one speaks to people tactfully and delicately, then they may acknowledge that yes, they're seeing a lot of things, and really it's a great relief to them to acknowledge this and to be reassured. And in general, I've written the book partly to reassure people that mostly it's okay to have hallucinations.
What's the relationship between the content of hallucinations, what it is we see or hear or feel or smell, and one's own cultural and personal references, one's experiences, that sort of thing?
One can't hallucinate something if one has no experience. There has to be a memory or an image there. I've actually been surprised at how many people here in the United States with Charles Bonnet syndrome seem to have rather exotic hallucinations and see people in oriental dress and things like that. I had a brother in Australia who had a lot to do with Aborigines there, and I said, what do the Aborigines see if they get Charles Bonnet? But alas, I didn't get a clear answer. Hmm. But I think sort of culture has to modify hallucinations or modify their interpretation. So one form of hallucination is the nightmare, which in its proper sense, you're awake but you have a feeling of some malignant presence in the room, and it may come close and it may sit on your chest, but people have this, and there are different narratives in every culture.
Is there a relationship between, say, lucid dreaming and hallucinations?
I don't think so. I've no experience of lucid dreaming, although I would like an experience of lucid dreaming. But lucid dreaming, as I understand it, is a rather fragile state, and you may either go deeper and stop being lucid, or you may come up and then you're no longer dreaming. It's a sort of special in-between state, whereas a hallucination tends to be clear and bold and no two ways about it, and it's it won't go away because you want it to go away. It'll sort of go away in its own time.
And in fact, you had another patient, a young woman named Ellen, who had had brain surgery, and the one complication that her doctors had not warned her about was that she might develop these really persistent visual hallucinations.
Sometimes hallucinations and sometimes very persistent visions. So few weeks after surgery, she saw a flower one day. It was in brilliant sunlight. She said the image seemed to burn itself into her brain, and she then saw that flower in half of her field of vision, superimposed over it for about 24 hours. Hmm. And that was very remarkable. She also tended to see cartoon figures. In particular, she saw Kermit the Frog. And she said, "Why Kermit? He means nothing to me." But I didn't know what to answer. I guess there must have been some reason why Kermit, or maybe some of the images thrown up are sort of random. And maybe the brain just excavates whatever there.
We are speaking with Dr. Oliver Sacks. He's professor of neurology at the NYU School of Medicine and author of the new book, Hallucinations. We'll come back to our conversation in a few minutes and invite you to join us by calling in to 1-800-933-5372. You can also email us at think@kera.org. We will talk again with Dr. Sacks in a few minutes. Right now, we want to give you the opportunity to receive a copy of his book, Hallucinations, as a thank you gift when you join the station at the $120 level or above today. Many of you we know will read everything that Oliver Sacks writes. This book is no less compelling than the others that you may have read over the years. Of course, he's well known for The Mind's Eye, Musicophilia, Seeing Voices, Awakenings, of course, which was made into a movie. If you would like to receive a copy of the new book, Hallucinations by Dr. Sacks, and also support KERA, get in touch with us now. Make a contribution of $10 a month or more at kera.org or over the phone at 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Winnington is back in studio now. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Chris. What a great conversation with Dr. Oliver Sacks. It's thrilling to have him back on the show again, and we're really excited that we're able to bring this conversation to you, just like we are thrilled to be able to bring you the conversations that we bring you every single day. And as Chris said, we do have copies of Dr. Sacks' book, Hallucinations, available with a $120 membership contribution. Or if you want to make your $10 a month contribution as a sustaining member, you can also choose to receive the third season, the current season that's running right now of Downton Abbey. It aired last night on our sister station, KERA 13. It's a huge blockbuster show from PBS and from Masterpiece. And if you're enjoying that and you want to have the whole season, well, we can make that available to you with a $120 or $10 a month contribution.
It is one of those shows that the great thing is, if you have not gotten into it yet, but you wonder what everybody's talking about, you can catch up in, I would say, a long weekend if you're really into it enough. So when those DVDs come, you'll be able to watch them and know what everyone else is raving about. It's a good show. And it is not, Jeff is a fan, my husband's a fan, it is not just a show for ladies, which I think some people think that it's, I don't know what they think it is, but it's really just a great drama. It's really fun.
It's kind of soap opera-y.
It's a soap opera, but they have British accents and they're very wealthy, and so it changes everything. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also make your contribution at kera.org. We know a lot of you make regular contributions and don't ask for a thank you gift. That, of course, is fine, too. On the other hand, if there's something you heard us talking about earlier, a few days ago, and you thought, if they would only mention this again, most of that stuff is still available, so
sure.
Check it out online at kera.org.
And it's New Member Monday. Remember, when you make your first-time membership, the Philip R. Johnson Foundation will give KERA an additional $50 in honor of you joining the station. Thanks to Heath Einstein in Dallas, Anna and Doug Wilson in Dallas, and Jessica Lonsdale in Dallas. They are new members of the station. Thank you so much. Please be the next one to call, 888-694-6931. Or join at kera.org.
You already know you love the station. You may love the show. You love a lot of the programming on KERA. Become a member now at kera.org. Back in 2 minutes with Dr. Oliver Sacks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Oliver Sacks. He is professor of neurology at the NYU School of Medicine and author of a number of books, the latest of which is called Hallucinations. You can join our conversation by emailing think@kera.org or by calling 1-800-933-5372. Joining us on the phone now is Andy in Dallas. Hello, Andy.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Dr. Sacks, I want to thank you for being on the show today. You actually helped me and my family in the past, not directly, but my father was losing his vision due to diabetes. And he told me one day in confidence, well, I'm seeing things, you know, I'm seeing monsters.
Can you speak a little slower?
Oh, I'm sorry. My father had diabetes, and he was starting to hallucinate due to the vision that was being reduced.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was afraid to tell anyone that he had, you know, that he was seeing these things that were terrifying him. And I had just happened to see a documentary and read about your work online, so we were able to figure out that's what he had with Charles-Vanay syndrome. And, you know, the doctors were able to talk to him about it. Eventually, you know, it subsided, it went away, but it was pretty scary. So do you think a lot of people go undiagnosed for fear of, you know, being labeled insane or having some sort of psychiatric disorder? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you for your call, Andy.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think almost a majority of people with Charles-Bonnet go undiagnosed, or they may be misdiagnosed, which may be even worse. And it's very, very important for people to come out with things and for it to be correctly diagnosed. And for that matter, sort of in my own profession, physicians are not as alert to some of these sensory deprivation hallucinations as they should be. I think I should have said earlier, some hallucinations have a strong personal quality. Charles-Bonnet ones don't. But, for example, after a bereavement, after losing a husband or a wife, one may see the person who has gone or hear them, and these bereavement hallucinations are often very comforting and seem to help the work of mourning. So sometimes hallucinations can serve a purpose.
Those mourning hallucinations make me wonder about the shared experience that many people have had that is called a near-death experience. Is that a form of hallucination?
Oh, yes. Well, there's been a book on it out recently called Proof of Heaven.
Right.
And subtitled A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Afterlife. These near-death experiences are hallucinations of a very elaborate and rather uniform type, which are much commoner now that people are saved from fatal heart attacks and strokes. These hallucinations tend to go with a feeling of joy or bliss and moving along some brilliantly lighted passage to some shining door at the end, which may be felt as God or the entrance to heaven. People may come out of these near-death experiences transformed and losing their fear of death and believing in heaven and all that. That's up to them what interpretation they give. But there's a definite series of neurological events, a cascade of events, which can occur in about 20 or 30 seconds if the brain is short of blood. And that's the near-death experience.
And is it possible to simulate that sort of experience without depriving the brain of blood for purposes of experimentation?
One may simulate a simpler thing called the out-of-body experience, when one seems to be looking down on one's vacated body. One's consciousness seems to be somewhere else. That can be simulated by stimulating the brain. I mean, one would not stimulate the brain unless one were examining the brain for other purposes. But, for example, some people who may need surgery for uncontrollable epilepsy will have part of the brain, they will have electrodes in part of the brain, and there you can pick up the exact moment when someone feels out of body, or for that matter, the exact moment when they have a religious hallucination, if they have that.
It's always seemed to me that it would be fascinating to experience an out-of-body sensation. And I suppose maybe that explains the interest that people have had over time, and particularly in our society in the 60s and 70s, the fascination with hallucinogenic drugs. And you've been pretty candid that you experimented with some of these substances as well.
Yes, I did experiment in the 60s with a lot of them. I had all sorts of experiences, although I didn't have an out-of-body one, and a hallucination is a first-person thing. One can't understand what a hallucination is like, really, unless one has one, though I think most people have at least minor hallucinations, sometimes when they're in bed with their eyes closed, but not yet asleep, and you can sort of see patterns and colors or faces. But I pushed the envelope a bit in the 1960s, and I'm grateful to be alive and well 40 years later.
Yes, we should say this is not your endorsement of hallucinogens
for entertainment
purposes. Yeah.
I won't deny what I did, but I will not. I would not recommend it.
Do you think, was there anything in that experience, that those experimentations, that allowed you to be more empathetic to your patients who deal with these things organically?
Yes, I think so. And I could understand much better some of the things which patients mentioned to me. For example, the fact that sometimes the continuity of vision would disappear, and you would see a series of snapshots, a series of stills, instead of someone moving. And I've had that myself with drugs. And so when patients told me about it, I knew what they were talking about, and I could reassure them or discuss it with them. And I think one drug experience played a part in getting me into writing. And when it did get me into writing, then I didn't take any more drugs.
You were able to fulfill that need in a different way.
Just by writing, it sort of helped open a door. When the door was open, that was fine.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Henry in the Colony. Hello, Henry.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
I just wanted to speak real quickly to the lucid dreaming deal. I've always remembered my dreams, and I can remember them every night, and they're very elaborate. And after reading Richard Feynman's biography, where he sort of tried to get himself to lucid dream, I got to the point where I can do it about 50% of the time, and it is really awesome.
Henry, can you speak a little slower, please?
Oh, sorry. Sort of, if you've seen the movie Inception, where they go into a dream state and they have this thing called a totem where it's a sort of a trick to see, am I dreaming or is this real? And I've implemented those in my dreams, and I'll think, wait a minute, maybe I'm asleep, and I'll have a test, and if I am dreaming, then I'll just fly away or breathe underwater, or I can just pretty much do anything I want.
One can go in circles. One often dreams that one is awake, when in fact one is still dreaming. But some people seem to be able to move through different levels of dreaming and sometimes to control it. I wish I could do that myself, but I can't. I just have regular dreams.
Can you talk about this, Oliver? One form of hallucination that maybe a lot more people have had but haven't thought about is the flashes of light or the experiences that precede the pain of a migraine headache.
Yeah. That was my own first experience, because I get migraines, although in a way I'm lucky because I get the visual parts and I don't get a headache which follows. But characteristically, this will start with a very bright spot, which will then seem to be vibrating or scintillating, and which then expands over the course of a few minutes into a sort of giant semicircle, and is very, very bright, and it may carry some blindness behind it. And the whole experience is, again, very uniform. It tends to last somewhere like 18 minutes, give or take 2 minutes, somewhere between 15 and 20 minutes. One may also get hallucinations of other senses before, as part of a migraine. Some people may start to sniff and to experience an unusual smell, which no one else can smell. Or they may hear an unusual sound or music, or they may feel something on their skin. But the visual hallucinations are the commonest, and one gets used to them because they're always pretty much the same. I'm one of the lucky ones, as I said, in that I have the visual parts but no headache afterwards.
My guest is Dr. Oliver Sacks. He's professor of neurology at the NYU School of Medicine and author of the new book, Hallucinations. If you'd like to join this conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. We will speak again in the next segment with Dr. Sacks and invite you to join us. But right now, we invite you to join the station as a supporting member of KERA. Join good folks like David Stotter in Dallas, Carolyn Moses in Royce City, Kishore Kandavali in Plano, and Amy Sullivan in Dallas. Really appreciate your contributions. Some of you most likely are making contributions for the third time, the fifth time, the 25th time. But for those of you who are joining us for the first time today, this is New Member Monday. And thanks to a special arrangement with the Philip R. Johnson Foundation, every first-time contribution to KERA in any amount will trigger an additional $50 gift from the Philip R. Johnson Foundation. That means there has never been a better time to initiate a membership at kera.org or over the phone at 1-888-694-6931. And when you do that, if you choose to give $10 a month or more, you might receive a copy of Dr. Oliver Sacks' new book, Hallucinations. Jeff Whittington is back in studio now. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And the number to call, of course, is 888-694-6931. Again, that toll-free number, 888-694-6931. Or you can join online at kera.org. We do have copies of Dr. Sacks' book, Hallucinations, when you join with a $120 membership level contribution. That's just $10 a month if you become a sustaining member of the station. And we would love to thank you with a copy of the book. You know, it's also the seven-day membership campaign, Chris. It's day four. And we've been asking you, when you make your contribution online at kera.org, to also send in your seven-word sentence description. Describing KERA, and there's a place you can do it right there. There's a banner for it on the website at kera.org. And Brett Davis says KERA is a source for greater understanding. And Candace Goodwin says KERA teaches me a little about a lot. So
nice.
There's a few seven-word, I call them seven-word essays.
They're very nice, and they're very interesting, and you know, what you love about the station may be different from what someone else loves. We know, as we always joke, that you'd love the station if you continue to listen into the membership campaign. And maybe it's because you sort of know that you ought to give a membership, and you're waiting for some magic offer or some magic word. I don't know whether we have the magic word or not, but if you think about it rationally, you listen a lot. You gain a lot of value from KERA. You hear about events going on in the world, in the community. Maybe you hear about books that you know you want to add to your list, whether that's at the bookstore or at the library. KERA becomes really integrated into multiple aspects of your life. If you spend, you know, multiple hours a week listening, your contribution, though, is really vital to keeping the station strong and healthy. You can make yours at kera.org or at 1-888-694-6931.
888-694-6931. I want to thank David Stouter in Dallas, Carolyn Moses in Roy City, Kishori Cannavale in Plano, and Amy Sullivan in Dallas. Thank you so much for your contributions. You can also join online at kera.org. If you're a Downton Abbey fan, we're offering you your very own DVD Season 3 set with a $120 contribution. That's just $10 a month when you become a sustaining member of the station. Or if you want to go $20 a month, we'll send you all three seasons of Downton Abbey. I think we're about three or four episodes into Season 3 right now, Chris, in the broadcast schedule on PBS. So, and it does take a little while for you to get your DVDs once you make your contribution. So we may not get them to you before you can see all the episodes. But if you call right now, 888-694-6931, you can let the person you talk to know that you want to get that Downton Abbey set. And this is going to be a great gift for someone who maybe loves the show or maybe hasn't seen the show or is just getting into the show. Or for you, you'll be able to sit and watch every single episode back to back and not have to wait a week to find out what's going to happen next. And I've seen the whole season, Chris.
I know. And I almost don't want to talk to you after the show's over because I don't want anything to slip.
Stuff happens on that show. Stuff happens.
I know.
People say things to each other. And they
now
interact,
you're just teasing me.
They
now
eat and stuff, and other stuff happens.
All right. And it's not a great sales pitch for people who've never seen it before.
There's a script, and it says what's going to happen.
And beautiful clothes. KERA.org is the website. It's hard to miss the Support KERA button when you get to that page. You can also call us if you prefer, 1-888-694-6931. As we mentioned earlier, we have Dr. Oliver Sacks' book available today. We have the Downton Abbey, two different packages. Everybody who makes a contribution, by the way, in this drive, is entered into the Win a Trip to D.C. contest.
Oh, yeah.
Which is not just a trip to D.C. This is a trip to D.C. that includes sitting in on the Diane Rehm Show and a broadcast of either Morning Edition or All Things Considered.
And we're not picking you up in the KERA cargo van and driving you to D.C.
It wouldn't make it.
Yeah, it would. Yes, it would. But we're not doing that. We're actually going to fly you on an aeroplane.
Yes, and you and a guest.
Yes. We'll use Downton Abbey speak. You and a guest will be flown on an aeroplane.
Why don't I run around and fetch the car? And
very good. And yeah. And you'll have a hotel room for 3 nights, and you get to see broadcast the Diane Rehm Show, and you get to see Morning Edition or All Things Considered. You can join the station and be automatically entered to win this trip. 888-694-6931 is the telephone number to call.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Dr. Oliver Sacks, professor of neurology at the NYU School of Medicine and author of the new book, Hallucinations. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can email think@kera.org or you can call in to 1-800-933-5372. We will go back to the phones now, and this time on the line we have Ed calling from Weatherford. Hello, Ed.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
I'm really glad that Dr. Sacks is on. I've read several of his books. And Dr. Sacks, the question I have for you is, I understand that hallucinations are generated from the experiences and knowledge that each person has stored in their brain. And what kind of hallucinations would people have that have never been sighted? I mean, are they going to have any kind of a visual hallucination? I know that I've had patients who have had vision and then lost it. That's one thing. But for people who have never been sighted, do they ever have visual hallucinations?
No, I think they don't have visual hallucinations, and if they've had no visual experience ever. I mean, they might have auditory hallucinations or hallucinations of smell. And similarly, with people who are born deaf, they will not hear voices or hear music as a hallucination. But there has to be some experience, although by the time things have been all mixed up inside and come out as a hallucination, it's a long way from the experience. So typically one doesn't recognize the people or places one sees in a hallucination. But a congenitally blind person will have to hallucinate something else.
What do you think might have been the occurrence of hallucinations by, say, sailors who were at sea for months at a time and would look out at the same landscape every day? They weren't blind, but they saw almost no variation.
Yeah, well, monotony. You know, whether one is on the high seas or in the desert or in the Antarctic snows, can certainly... one has to have not only some vision, but visual change. And a very monotonous environment can lead to hallucinations. And this was first examined after World War II, when one had reports from high-flying pilots of hallucinations and truckers on long white roads. And one can simulate these hallucinations by blindfolding people, and if people are well blindfolded, almost all of them will be hallucinating after 48 hours.
Hmm. So do you think that any of the legendary creatures that almost every culture has down through the ages, elves and leprechauns and fairies, could those have begun with one person's description of a personal hallucination?
It's quite common, you know, among hallucinations to have so-called Lilliputian hallucinations, when you see tiny human beings or tiny animals. And one has to suspect that this sort of thing has played a part in generating folklore about elves and imps and sprites and fairies. And the sort of the nightmare hallucinations, which I mentioned, could certainly spawn ideas of witches and demons.
Hmm.
One suspects that hallucinations may be a fertile source for such things, and also for heavenly beings as well as hellish ones.
Hmm. And one also has to wonder about their role in literature. You know, you think about some of the greatest stories that have, certainly some have sprung from imagination, but is there evidence that any of our most important literary figures suffered from hallucinations?
Yes, there's certain evidence with Dostoevsky, who would have attacks of epilepsy, which were ushered in by a so-called ecstatic hallucination. And he would suddenly cry, "God exists, God exists," and this might be followed by a convulsion, although sometimes he just had that. And Dostoevsky gives such epilepsies and such hallucinations to many of his characters, Prince Myshkin and others. And so he's quite a lot of the poets and writers of in the early 19th century, Baudelaire, Poe, Coleridge, De Quincey, were into drugs one way and another, if not to hallucinate, then to stimulate the imagination. Although hallucination is different from imagination, but one may leap from one to the other.
Is it characteristic of, I don't know if this is even the right word, but benign hallucination that is not related to mental illness, is it characteristic that after a bit of perhaps confusion, we recognize that what we are seeing, hearing, smelling is in fact not real?
Yes, I think there's no confusion. One would certainly recognize it, although it may take a moment to do so. I've on the whole avoided saying anything much about the hallucinations of mental illness and of schizophrenia in particular. Here one usually hears voices and they are addressed to one, and they can abuse one or accuse one or encourage one. But there the hallucinations go with a state of mind, whereas with something like Charles Bonnet syndrome, they seem completely unrelated to what people are doing or thinking or feeling.
So they wouldn't necessarily intensify a mood or even affect a mood. They're just, they are what they are.
Basically, although perhaps a mood might make them darker.
So do you think, Oliver, that we have some evolutionary need for hallucinations, or are these just an accident of the way our very complicated brains work?
Well, I think perhaps there's one would suspect both. There's certainly like accidents, but something like the bereavement hallucinations definitely seem to play a part. And I think a very fearful situation, such as being in the heat of battle or being near an explosive device, can give a stress reaction with hallucinations, which may also have some advantage and prevent one being making a fool of oneself. And it does seem to be a very distinctive form of consciousness, and maybe it has some and perhaps allows one to become conscious, if that's the right word, of what is beyond the senses, which would certainly be the case with religious hallucinations.
So we can continue to, if we choose to, sort of look for meaning in hallucinations, but that meaning is really up to our own interpretation?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I guess the last thing I want to ask you about is whether it's harder to convince someone who has experienced, say, a bereavement hallucination or a near-death experience hallucination, if those individuals have a harder time recognizing this as a hallucination event as opposed to something of a supernatural nature.
Yeah. I think it's much easier to acknowledge it with a bereavement hallucination. And people may talk freely about those. With something like a near-death experience, it may get so tied up with one's wishes, one's beliefs, and one's culture that it's hard to call it a hallucination. But I think it's important to do so. Again, one may feel that even though something is a hallucination, it tells the truth. And people are entitled to that belief. I don't think hallucinations lie. I don't think they tell the truth. They're just there. I don't think they're evidence for anything except the brain's power to create them.
Dr. Oliver Sacks is professor of neurology at the NYU School of Medicine. His latest book is called Hallucinations. Oliver, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, pleasure to speak with you, Chris.
Thanks to all of you who have listened this afternoon, who are listening, and especially thanks to those of you who have made contributions. People like Carol Witcher in Fort Worth, Nikki Green in Balt Springs, Dan Wells in Mansfield, and hey, Nicole Loper in Dallas. Thank you so much. All of them have made contributions at KERA.org or at 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington is back in studio now. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, Chris. Katie sent us her seven-word sentence. Chris Boyd reigns supreme every weekday afternoon.
That's so nice.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate all of you who have let us know why you love the station. We would love to send you back a little treat if you become a member today or renew your membership. We have copies of Hallucinations by Oliver Sacks. If you've never read an Oliver Sacks book, he's great because he gives you all the science, but he's such a storyteller. And so you get really wrapped up in the experiences of people. And he's got such a great respect for his patients and for their experiences that it's really, I think he's a wonderful person, even if you're not always a nonfiction reader.
Well, we have copies of that book available today when you join at the $120 membership level. That's just $10 a month when you become a sustaining member. It's very easy for you to set up. You can use a credit or debit card, and it just makes the the debit or the credit charge once a month at $10. You may not even notice it on your statement. You can also set it up so it comes out of your bank account. It's very easy to do at KERA.org or on the phone at 888-694-6931. If you're joining for the very first time, it is New Member Monday, and your first-time contribution and any amount will trigger an additional $50 from the Philip R. Johnson Foundation. What an opportunity. If you made a $120 contribution, well, the Philip R. Johnson Foundation is going to kick in another $50. So it's like you're making that $170 contribution, and you go, you can help KERA that much more with your contribution today, especially if you've never given to the station. So please go online right now to KERA.org or call 888-694-6931. And be sure and tell the person you talk to that you're giving to the station for the first time.
The wonderful thing about a KERA contribution is that you get to hear exactly what's happening to your money. Every time you tune in to Morning Edition or All Things Considered or the Diane Rehm Show or Fresh Air or now The Story, your dollars are right there. You're listening to them every single day. We have a few folks who are day sponsors, which is a really cool membership level. You can give $1 a day. For $1 a day, you get all the entire wealth of KERA. I think I listen for definitely more than $1 worth every day, and that's just in the hours that I'm not here at the station.
Yeah, so you can really help, you know, help create the reality in which it's not a hallucination. The station actually does exist.
It's real.
It is real, thanks to your contribution and the contributions of others who care about the station, who care about public radio in general, and who want to make sure that there is a high-quality public radio station here in North Texas for everyone to listen to be affected by, to be informed by, and to enjoy. Make your call right now to 888-694-6931 or contribute at KERA.org. And don't forget, if you are a Downton Abbey fan, we're offering you a couple of different Downton Abbey packages today. Some DVDs of the season that's even running right now.
That is right. We are in season 3. We have, with a $120 contribution or $10 a month, you can receive the entire DVD series of season 3. If you want to double that and go to $20 a month, which really is great if you use a sustaining membership plan, we will send you all 3 seasons, right?
Yeah.
So season 1,
yeah.
Season 2, and now the current season 3. It is a great value is not the word because we're not selling you these DVDs, but it's also great for KERA. That $240 a year from you is really significant for us, and brings you the kind of coverage that you have come to rely on. You know, for years you've come to KERA expecting the very best in national and international coverage. We had this award-winning news team, small but hardworking. I'm sure many of you have noticed that we have been really beefing up our local presence in the past few months, over the past year. There's a much more robust web presence. All of that is made possible that we can bring you local coverage at the high level that we have brought you national and international coverage. All of that is made possible with your support.
888-694-6931. Online at KERA.org. $20 a month, the contribution level, and we'll send you all 3 seasons of Downton Abbey. $10 a month, we'll send you the current season on DVD, the season 3 that is running right now. And the best thing about this is that you can enjoy KERA, you can listen to the station, and you can then kick back and you can watch as many Downton Abbey episodes in a row as you want to. You don't have to wait until next week to find out, you know, what happens to Lady Edith or anybody else.
You just have to wait for the kids to go to bed.
Maybe at your house.
Yeah.
But, I guess what kids don't like Downton Abbey?
No, they do. There's some subject matter that I would probably not want to share with them.
Well, my dogs don't have any. I mean, I don't hold anything back from them. And sometimes they
just very permissive.
They do watch the TV. I mean,
the chickens come to the window and peer in.
Chickens do not watch. I don't know. Maybe I should see if chickens would watch television, because dogs and cats will watch a little bit of television. It might be like the greatest thing in the world for chickens, though. Who knows? Maybe somebody knows, and we can talk about that on Friday at noon, right here on the station. But the best thing is you don't have to. You know, you can watch them all again. We'd love to send you the whole shebang of Downton Abbey if you make that $240 contribution. It's just $20 a month. call us, 888-694-6931.
We know that KERA is a big part of your intellectual life, a big part of your information source. You know, many of you will hear a story and then check out the website, and then you will go look for other information. That is, I think, the beauty of public radio, is that very often stories that you may have heard elsewhere are presented in far greater depth. They're analyzed, but without the overlay of opinion that many people just don't want anymore. You know, people feel like there's too much of that out there. We are proud to be sort of the bastion of straight-ahead broadcast journalism without trying to tell you what to think, without shouting. Your support makes it possible for this coverage to come to you 365 days a year. You can make a contribution for the first time, for the 15th time, whatever, online now at kera.org, where you can check out thank you gifts and ways to pay. You will automatically be enrolled to win that trip to D.C., potentially. Or you can, of course, go over the phone and make your pledge there at 1-888-694-6931.